10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to a Trending Topics Network presentation of Toons Game Time right here at toonshow.com and all the various outlets which you can find us. If you go to trendingtopicsnetwork.com right now, you can find a whole bunch of different podcasts, one to suit your needs. If you're into professional wrestling, by all means, check out Spanish Announce Table and DSJNP, I think. It's a whole bunch of letters slammed together. I know DS, J, P, and N are in it. I just don't know what to order because I'm frankly tired. I'll get into that in a minute. But you can also find Old School with the Movies if you're into big silver screen stuff where they have pictures moving on them. Anything Goes, where they talk about just about anything, including what kind of blow-up doll is your favorite thing, I guess. That could be a topic on Anything Goes. I mean, it is Anything Goes. And also Toons. So be sure to check out TrendingTopicsNetwork.com, where you can find each and every show on the Trending Topics Network. If you'd like to get a hold of this show, which is Toons Game Time, I'm Brian, by the way. You can find everything you need to find out about the show and Toons at toonshow.com. You can find me on Twitter at toonsbrian. Email the show, toonshow@gmail.com. And, as our guest has done this very morning, you can get a hold of us on Skype with the Skype ID toonshow. Who knew? TOONSSHOW. It's as easy as that, remember that? And you can find absolutely anything you want that has anything to do with this show or Toons with Jack and Brian. At this time, I'm going to introduce our guest. He's the first repeat guest for Toons Game Time. The Canadian, you don't want to say crippler because then people think you're a murderer.
I'm fine. I'm a Chris Benoit fan, minus his murder work, but it's in ring work.
But
I can be the crippler. I'm going to take it back. I'm going to make crippler a good thing again. Like it was in the old days?
We'll call you the crippled Canadian.
Crippled Canadian. Let's go with that. No alternative is going to beat that, so. The crippled Canadian, Ryan Noble. Sorry, continue.
It's less imposing.
Not offensive, that's for sure. To anybody.
Not very intimidating. It is Ryan Noble. How you doing this morning, Ryan?
I'm great. How are you doing, Brian?
Oh, I'm dead tired, as everybody can tell probably by that wonderful intro.
Crippled Canadian.
It's 9 o'clock right now. In the AM. I do work midnights. I've been up since 1 o'clock yesterday. So I'm reaching my limits. And it's one of those things. I'm in that sweet spot right now to where I was like, maybe I should have a cup of coffee. Well, if I had a cup of coffee, then by the time we're done with this show, I won't be able to go to sleep. I'll be a little caffeinated. And if I don't go to sleep now, in the morning, then I'm going to sleep during the hockey game tonight, as the Penguins play the Capitals, at which point I'd be grumpy. And if I try to stay up for the hockey game, then I have to make it through another night of work tonight. So I'm like, got to avoid the coffee. So what everybody's going to get from me, at least this episode, is dead exhausted version of Brian who just rambles on and on. Can you believe that?
That's one of my favorite Brians, personally.
So. Yeah. I think everybody likes that, Brian.
I think so, too.
Yeah, especially if they're trying to get information out of me. Because I'm usually pretty good at that, but I tend to get giddy. Like, my wife and I always have problems whenever we're both tired, because that's not a good combination, because she gets really grumpy. And I'm the opposite, where I'm like, everything is funny. And I get totally over the top. I'm like, all right, let's make this. And those two just do not gel at all.
Especially when both parties are exhausted. Yeah. I'm the same way as you. When I reach that point of exhaustion, I just get ridiculous. Like, just I'm irritating, and I know it. I realize it, and I know that with Christine, anyways, I just get in that mode. And I think that she might be similar to your wife in the sense that her willingness to find my stupidity funny at that time, where normally she's pretty. The fact that she puts up with me on a daily basis speaks very well of her character and her patience, but when she's tired and I'm tired, I'm unbearable. So I'm usually tired, so I'm tired right now.
It's kind of funny how we end up with people like that, and like, if it weren't for the whole tired thing, my wife and I would be pretty much 100% perfectly compatible. But that whole tired thing, we're complete opposites when it comes to that, and it does not work well together. Because once you're tired, you have absolutely no way of governing your reactions to each other, and it's nuts. But either way, just looking at the week ahead, we've got a lot going on this week, including one of the things that I was going to maybe start doing with games in particular, because there's a lot of games out there, and I know there's a lot of like review sites and all this other stuff. And typically whenever a site does a review, one of the things that they do is they play the whole game to completion. And I don't know about you, Ryan, but when I get a game, to play off a game the whole way to completion can literally take me months. Mm-hmm. Just months. And frankly, I don't care necessarily when I read a review about all the little minutiae that they always seem to go into. Like talking about, well, in this level, then the frame rate kind of drops off. Because honestly, who notices the frame rate? Can you notice a difference between like 50 and 60 frames per second?
No, you can't. I wouldn't. I mean, details like that in a review, I wouldn't care for either. I just want to know if the game is good, if it's entertaining, if it looks good for the most part, and if it doesn't glitch every, so often.
Yeah, so what I was thinking about doing, and listeners can tell me if they think it's a good idea or if they think it's a shit idea. I was kind of thinking of doing something that I was considering calling it like a rental review, because the first impression is often what hooks you into a game, whether or not you want to play it or not. I mean, I have games on my shelf that I played literally like maybe 3 hours of, and I just never went back to it because I never got into it. But then there's other games where I play it, and within minutes, I'm like, oh yeah, this game, it's good to go. So I was kind of thinking about doing that. Imagine yourself renting a video game, playing it for that period of time, which is less than a day, and then you just go by that impression. So I think that's kind of what I'm going to do, because I, as a dad, working the crazy schedule that I work, I don't always have time, because I do typically play like a more mature style of game. But the thing is, I can't play it when the kids are up.
Mm-hmm.
So it literally like takes me months. I'm still playing The Last of Us, which I can only play when the kids are in bed.
And I have not played that at all yet. So,
yeah,
I've heard incredible
things.
It's just
very rough.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I'm playing adult video games at all hours with no children over here, so. Just.
Yeah, and like the thing is, though, it's like I think it's important for people to know, is the game worth playing? Is the game worth even investing in? Because we go out and we buy some games, and the reviews say, hey, do this. Well, you know what? Freaking Final Fantasy 13, XIII, looked awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a Final Fantasy game, so I was all about it. It came out on the 360. I went out and I bought it, and I heard, yeah, the whole tutorial section or whatever just kind of drags on. But I played that game for about 8 hours and felt like I was getting nowhere. And I don't want to. I don't have that kind of time to waste. Mm-hmm. I want a game that's immediately accessible to me and something that I don't have to go through that kind of bullshit. So that's what I was going to try to do, is try to do like a Reynolds review, something that it's just a quick review of the game. I mean, what's it like? What's it? Are the controls sticky? Like just the basic, very basic stuff. Because I know that we're doing, my son and I, like, playing all the retro games and stuff like that. And that's pretty easy to do because I mostly leave him in charge of it. but I pretty much just pick the games for him to play. But, like, the Swapper, I started playing that on PS4. I think it was on PS3 as well. But it's a fun little puzzle game. I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think most people just want to know, is the game worth playing? Is it worth playing?
That's all anyone ever wants to know.
Yeah.
Ever.
I don't know. Well, I like that.
I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, I remember back when, like, video stores existed, where you could go and, like, rent movies. They would also, like, Blockbusters, they would also rent video games. So when I was younger, a lot of times, especially even when I turned, like, 16 years old, let's say, because I moved out fairly young, so I was buying my own video games at a fairly young age. I would go and rent a game before I would even buy it, and then that way, you know, I could sit through, I could, you know, get a good jump into it, and then have an idea if the game is actually worth purchasing or not. Minus like your NHL games and stuff like that, I always knew that it was going to be the exact same game anyway, so I'd just buy it. But
yeah. Yeah, and some franchises are pretty dependable. But there's a lot of games, like, there's a lot of really good-looking games coming out. It's just a matter of, I'm almost hesitant to buy them, like, The Order 1886.
Mm-hmm.
I really kind of want that, but at the same time, I know for a fact that as my situation dictates, I'm going to end up having to pick and choose what games I buy simply because my wife won't put up with me buying a $60 game every month or every couple weeks, as it were.
People start going to the donation start on toons.com, top left corner.
And there you go. And big shout out to you because you actually donated, so I appreciate that. It actually paid for Sonic Spinball, and I didn't even realize it.
Nice. Yeah, because I was just trying to be generous. It had nothing to do with trying to figure out if I'd finally set up a PayPal account correctly. It was strictly to make sure that you would get Sonic Pinball.
But it is much appreciated, and if you choose to do so, you can actually donate as well. Just
I felt good doing
upper left-hand corner of the page.
Yeah.
So, toonshow.com. Not only do you go to toonshow.com and find all the fun, you know, stuff, you can also listen to the podcast right there just by clicking on it, and you can stay there and look at our pretty pictures.
Totally. It's like your one-stop source for everything.
And by everything, you mean, like, everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
But I think people didn't... See, this is the whole rambling thing. I think people, they tune into Game Time to hear about the news and things like that, mm-hmm. as they pertain to video games. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to forcibly segue into the news of the week.
Insider news from the video game industry, from the outside. It's Toons Game Time News Time.
First up, this week in the news, speaking of money and things like that, as I struggle to find my way here, Electronic Arts, also known as EA, believes that the future of gaming actually lies in free-to-start gaming. Now, if you're not familiar with free-to-start gaming is, essentially what it boils down to is they're going to give you a game in the future at some point, and then microtransaction the shit out of you. Either microtransactions or things like you pay a subscription to play that game. It's just, I don't know where I stand on this, simply because it's such a tough spot to be in, I'm sure, for developers as well. They're out there, they put out these games, they put a lot of work into them, and then they sell it and then forget it. For some of the games, at least. Any initial thoughts, Ryan, on like a free-to-start kind of format where they end up charging you essentially after you've already bought the game?
I don't like that at all. I mean, this was one of the topics anyways that I was trying to go over and over in my head trying to come up with how I felt on it. And, I mean, essentially, isn't this just, I mean, it seems to me anyways, like, no different than when they would offer, like, a free, like, a trial of the game. There's a word for this. A demo. And then, like, mm-hmm. kind of base your... I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't know. I mean, I would have to learn more about it, too, I guess. I would have to understand how maybe the fee process would work. But I would rather just buy a game. Like you said, if it's $60 when it comes out, I pay my $60, and then that's it. If they want to charge for stuff, you know, like, I mean, certain games have ways that they make money beyond that, you know, whether it be, like, add-ons or, like... In hockey games, you can pay to get attribute points or pucks. You know, I mean, there's ways they can make a continuing like flow of money without charging repeatedly for essentially the same thing that you've already could have just paid for in a $60 shot.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This whole story actually originated at the EA during their earnings call for the quarter. Basically, they already have their foot in the door with PC formats and mobile formats and things like that. So they're kind of looking at it from a console's perspective. Andrew Wilson, who is the Electronic Arts CEO, actually said that he thinks gamers will actually expect console games to be available for free to begin with, and then to have... like a microtransaction kind of set up later. Now, with me, I toss this back and forth, and I've been thinking about it all night at work, because it's one of those situations where, on one hand, you want to say it's bad because you're going to pay a subscription to play a game. And that is bad. I think that's bad for business. I think it's bad for gamers. On the other hand, if they make a free-to-start game and that game turns into shit, nobody is going to pay a subscription to play that game. Nobody is going to pay for the downloadable content for that game. And so it kind of forces them to put out a decent product. Mm-hmm. So from that angle, I'm actually kind of in favor of it. But... at the same time, it's kind of a whole new world that I'm not 100% comfortable with at this point.
I know you would think that it would entice them to put more work into their games. Will it really? I mean, because they're still going to be putting out games, and people are going to download them because you can download it for free initially, and then they're inevitably going to be getting money anyways. So though it might get them to maybe try to step up their games with video games for a little while... once it becomes mm-hmm. the way that just games are purchased, why would they really need to put any extra effort? They could release the worst games ever, and everyone's like, oh, well, you know, it's free anyways, even though it's not. I'd be like going and like getting a movie on like Rogers. You guys don't have... I'm sure you guys have some kind of on-demand services in America where you get to watch movies on your television. Imagine, like, renting, like, a new movie and then getting, like, 20 minutes into it because it's free. They're like, free movie. 20 minutes in, it's like, would you like to continue watching this movie? If so, you have to pay, like, $1. And then you continue, and then you're like, if you're still satisfied with the way this movie is going down, pay another $1. And in the end, it's like $4. It gets to the final scene. Charge you $4.
Yeah, like two girls, one cup. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. We're not talking about
that. I'm not paying for
that.
Any more of this. No, thank you. I would have been out at like 3 seconds in that video. Done.
Yeah, you're like, that's enough of that one. But Wilson went on to say during the conference, he said, there's a couple different vectors to this, and this is a quote. The first is, as we look to the future, we believe a very big part of our player base will expect a free-to-start experience. And when we look at film, television, music, books, very often there is this free trial notion that actually onboards new players, new listeners, new readers, or new viewers into a service. You know, that's kind of true, in a way, because Netflix obviously gives away like a 2-week free trial or a month free trial, something like that. You do get that. But when you're talking about games that are individual chapters, it just seems to me like it's a little bit different. And I've actually heard the comparison in the past week, because I listened to a number of different podcasts, that kind of explained, I wish I could remember which podcast it was, because I'd totally credit them for this. They basically said, if you look at a video game and compare it to a movie, yeah, you're paying $60 for a video game, but most video games aren't going to be an hour and a half or 2 hours like a movie is. You're paying that $60 and you're getting, like in the case of, say, Skyrim,
which I was just about
80 hours of play.
Exactly. I'm still playing that game.
Oh, so
like,
am
I'm still getting my money's worth on that game. So, I mean,
yeah. So it is. It's kind of interesting, and I think that a lot of this actually did come at the heels of sort of the Skyrim Online, or Elder Scrolls Online. They didn't call it Skyrim Online. But the Elder Scrolls Online, they basically had to make their game free, and they're doing this very thing for the massive multiplayer online experience. And so it's not like it's completely unprecedented, but moving it to the consoles, it sort of is, because Elder Scrolls Online is actually on the PC, and you've got, like, World of Warcraft has been that way for, what, 15 years?
What was the one that was, like, Everlast, or there was another one, too, that was, like, the exact same thing, or Evercraft, or I don't even remember what it was called. I should have just not talked. But there was something that was, like, a similar idea.
Yeah, I think Evercraft is like that.
That was the big one up here, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I don't know exactly what fully to make of it. I'm sure that we're going to hear more as they come up with ideas, because they are looking at it as a future possibility and not something that's 100% set in stone.
And though, like you said, I mean, like, for a game like Skyrim, like, it wouldn't be so terrible, but the majority of games are not like Skyrim. I mean, I don't know, like, other series is like even with like God of War, for example. If I play that, like, I mean, I, for the most part, I play that game once, and it's usually it.
Yeah.
I play it happily and intent. Like, I love that series, minus the last one. But I couldn't imagine like almost like a pay to play service with it. I don't know. It wouldn't work the same. I don't like it.
I've never gotten into those things, and that's one of the things that scares me, I think. Because I'm not, like, the microtransactions on my cell phone games, I'm like, nope, not doing it.
No, thank you.
Yeah, and I've never been one to play MMOs on the PC or anything like that, so it's not something that I'm actually that into to begin with. But they did say it's not going to happen anytime soon, so like I said, nothing to worry about yet, but in the future it's a possibility, and it's going to probably be completely determined not by what gamers say, but by what shareholders say, unfortunately.
Monsters.
And it is EA, who is an evil corporation to begin with. But let's move on to the next story here. All right, so if you had Sony PlayStation Network back in 2011, this story is for you. The headline is, Sony is accepting claims on 2011 PSN data breach settlement. Basically, what's happening right now is there's a settlement readily available for users who actually were on board with PlayStation Network. prior to May 14th, 2011, the actual hack took place in April. So it's kind of funny that that happened in April, but as long as you were with them before May 14th was after the breach, you can actually partake in this settlement. Over 70 million user accounts were compromised. The settlement actually allows for users to receive either one or two new games if they were subscribers before that May 14th date. If they actually accepted a free game in Sony's Welcome Back promotion, then they only get one game this time around. No PS4 games are available for this specific promotion. And if there's no game that the user is actually interested in, they can opt out for either themes or PlayStation Plus subscriptions. So you were actually part of the PSN at the time of this breach?
I'm trying to think if I actually used the PSN, though. I might not have. I'm fairly new with any kind of online gaming, so anything that I really would have done then probably would have just been on the system itself, opposed to actually going online for anything. So I don't know if I would have qualified for that. I'm trying to think if I would, but plus I already have God of War and Little Big Planet, so I don't need any of those games.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you look at it and there was so much stuff, and that ended up a huge joke with Sony's PlayStation Network, because they essentially challenged hackers. Because the way they handled it from the beginning, they were just so defiant. And they ended up looking up like a bunch of idiots. And that's, I think, why they get so much grief, like on Christmas Day, whenever they were shut down for 5 days. Because it's like, with every turn, they just can't seem to get a hold of their system. Mm-hmm. And when you got 70 million users, rather, with their sensitive information just being exposed, and they're going to give a couple of games away. it doesn't seem right. Now, at the same time, I think that if somebody's credit card information was exposed and they ended up an actual victim outside of just somebody having their number, they should be entitled to more.
Much more. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure that the majority of that 70 million people who had accounts, I'm just guessing. I don't have any numbers, but I wouldn't assume that too many people were affected in that. Like, the majority of people are just looking at this, oh, I get a free game, or I can add to my PlayStation Plus, and, you know, but I don't think many people were.
Yeah, at most, I would imagine people just got to claim the victim card, saying, oh my gosh, somebody has my information.
Yeah, and this is Sony's way of just, like, making the majority happy, you know? Even though the few people that actually probably had their credit card number compromised and possibly used, it's going to be the other 69.8899 million people that are like, oh, free game. So they'll be happy.
Yeah.
They're just making the majority of people happy so that...
And honestly, I think it really is fair, because, and maybe it's not even fair, it's kind of a PR move on their part, because, I mean, I've received letters in the mail saying that numbers were compromised, or like credit card numbers were compromised, on a number of different occasions, and they don't offer you anything, they just say, keep an eye on your bill.
Be careful, something could happen.
Yeah. And essentially, that's all it is. And so on that note, like, Sony is actually, I think, doing good by their customers in this case. The problem is that they made such an ass of themselves whenever it was actually happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that really they tried to make good on. But obviously, still, there was a class action suit that they had to settle on. And they were kind of painted into the corner in this instance. And I think they're just trying to make...
the majority happy.
Make good.
And they are. Most people are getting a free video game or two. So, I mean, most people are just going to look at that. Sony's awesome. I got a free game today.
You get a free
game?
Well,
I mean, if I was affected by this, I would be getting a free
game.
Oh, okay,
yeah. There's nothing like free games to change one's opinion. Because, I mean, it says that you can get Little Big Planet and God of War HD.
Those were the notable ones, they said. Which, God of War HD? I didn't notice the HD part. I didn't know that an HD version existed. But I guess it would, because the original one was, what, on PlayStation 1? Maybe 2.
It was on 2, yeah. I believe.
Yeah. And it was incredible. I want it on HD now. Man, I wish I was affected by this.
Why
am I not getting free games, Sony? I'm going to look into it and see if I can get a free God of War HD.
Well, lucky for you, I'll actually send you the link, and you can actually go to the website. Maybe they'll have more information on how to check that out.
Are you learning something here on Toons already? Or I'm already. Okay, I think I have the link.
Yeah.
See? One-stop source for everything.
Absolutely
video games,
everything.
Possibly. We'll see. I'll get back to you on that later.
We actually have more information, I believe. Yeah, we talked about this next story, or a similar story, to the next story, the last time you were on, so we're going to move on to that. The 00001 of 12,300 Anniversary Edition PS4s. I absolutely love this system. It's sold on eBay in a charity auction. I can't even talk. This is how tired I am. $128,000 in a charity auction. This is courtesy of joystick.com. The first off the line Anniversary Edition PlayStation 4 went for 15.135 million yen in an online charity auction, which converts to $128,000. This is unit one of 12,300. Basically, they're going to have to confirm. I haven't seen any update on it yet, but they had to confirm that the actual purchase price was the actual purchase price, because we talked about the game stadium events.
That old Nintendo one.
It was actually up whenever we talked at, I believe, $99,800. I mean, the final selling price on that was actually $35,000 and change, which is still
a
chunk
of
change.
Money.
Yeah, and we look at it and we're like, holy cow. But imagine how that dude felt that was selling it, that at one point saw it up over $100,000.
High-fiving everything.
Yeah, he was out, like, buying eight balls and stuff. And
no doubt. I mean, what else do you do when you got that kind of money coming in? You buy eight balls.
And all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, you got 35 grand.
I'm going to buy eight balls.
Yeah. He just had a hell of a day when he saw that. So basically, the limited edition console went on sale just over a month ago. With a $500 price tag, and I wanted one of these so
bad.
I love
this
thing.
It's so awesome looking. Yeah.
It's just good. It's a good looking machine. It's modeled completely after the PS1, with the all gray design, the PlayStation camera all gray, the controller just looks
great. It really
great.
Does.
So I would have liked to have one, but 128 grand was just a little bit out of my price range. And that one, as we said, actually sold in Japan. The charity that receives the proceeds from said first one-off-the-line machine, I lost it here, to Save the Children Japan. So that's pretty awesome. That they're actually able to make that big contribution to the charity of their choice. Any final thoughts on that? Because really I just picked it because we talked about the auction.
I mean, the charity side of it, that's awesome. It's a lot of money for when we discussed that Nintendo game, what was it called? Stadium
Stadium Events.
I mean, that game was old. It was nostalgic. It wasn't something that just came off a line in the last year. I mean, you would have to assume that the majority of the money would be going just, I would like to think, is just to maybe help out the charity and get something that might be cool. But what are you going to do with this play? Like, you couldn't even play it. Could you, yeah. Could you play it? No.
Like, what, yeah, absolutely
would that
not.
Would depreciate its value. But I mean, what value is there in something, I guess, that's so new that there is? How many of them were made again? I have it, the link up.
There were 12,300, and this was
the first one
first
to come
on.
Man, I wonder if I still get one of these. I need a PS4. So
it's one of those instances where the serial number means
everything. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, what's this still going to be worth? I mean, I don't know. Well, yeah, like especially with Sony and all these possible changes coming, and like, what happens if Sony ends up like folding, and then what's this game going to be worth in like 20 years? And this guy's like, I spent all of the money in the universe on this system. It's kind of funny too, like just to show how like in retro things are, because I remember when I got the first PlayStation, I never thought it was, like, one of the attributes I would have not bragged about was the look of it. I never really was. But then this, like, brand new, like, PS4 modeled after the PlayStation 1 comes out, and I think it's, like, the most gorgeous system I've ever seen in my life. So it is.
It's so nice looking.
It just goes to show how easily I could be convinced to buy something that I probably don't even really want that bad.
My PS1 kind of looks like one of the computers from, like, freaking Broken Arrow. Steven Seagal, where they're, like, trying to nuclear bomb thing. I mean, it's just such a clunky-looking device. And this PS4 version is just amazing.
Really cool. It's so much cooler.
And you kind of wonder, in 20 years, are we going to look at the PlayStation 4 and be like, that thing was made of plastic?
Look at the graphics on that system. What a mess.
Yeah, like, what the hell? It doesn't even project light.
you can't even put yourself in the game. What is this?
No,
this is ridiculous.
Right? It is. It's way cool, though. Like, just the whole system, the way they did it. I'm such a fan of what they did. But, again, 128 grand. Thank you. But I would ask, are they buying it because it was the number one, or did the price go that high because it was a charity and people tend to feel good about giving to charities if they have the money to spend?
I mean, I think that I like to think that it was because of the charity. I just can't see, I don't know, it just seems like they would possibly be limiting the possibility of how much money a charity could get. It is a video game system, after all. I mean, I know it's the first one and everything, but if someone's raising money and this raised money for a charity, and if the charity was a good cause, I don't care what or how. I mean, obviously outside like criminal activities, you know, that's fine. I'm go charity, yay, money.
Woo-hoo! For the children
and
of the world.
Isn't that, no, I got nothing.
Yeah. Either way, moving on. Typically, we only do three news stories, but I threw a fourth one in there just because I have complete creative control over this show, which is why it's hit or miss. There's some good news on the Windows 10 front. Now, Windows 10, I'm like super excited about. Microsoft had their big unveiling, big conference for Windows 10 this past week. Well, one of the things that they talked about was the HoloLens, which I am completely boned up over. But also, Microsoft has announced that Xbox One owners will soon be able to stream their library to any Windows 10 device later this year. That's a pretty big development. Says Phil Spencer, Xbox head, he says, quote, "With Windows 10, we will enable streaming of Xbox One games to any PC or tablet running Windows 10. They kind of put a focus on Forza Horizon 2, streaming it directly to a Surface Pro 3, which is a pretty nice machine in itself. This could totally changed things for Microsoft. I know that, like, you have the Wii U, and you can play the Wii U games on the pad with the TV otherwise mm-hmm. occupied. This is kind of adding that possibility to the Microsoft's Xbox mm-hmm. One. Do you think this is going to be just a matter of time before we
everything?
See this on
yeah,
Sony
I don't
as
think
well?
Especially, like, with it coming out now, I wouldn't expect it to be very long before everyone allows this. I mean, but if Microsoft comes up with it first, you know, they might be able to... It'll be original, so people will flock towards it, maybe. But I have a lot of questions about how it would work, I guess, before I would be even sold on the idea. Would you need the system... Mm-hmm. still in the same room because like for the remote control to work? Because with the Wii, like you said, there's the screen on it, and only with Wii yeah. U games, like you though you can play Wii games on your Wii U, it doesn't work on the control. You have to mm-hmm. use like the classic control for that,
okay,
but
yeah.
for any Wii U game, you can get the screen on the control itself. However, you have to be in the room because of the Bluetooth or the wireless signal to connect.
It's my understanding that this Windows 10 streaming thing is going to require a local Wi-Fi. So basically...
It would connect to your
router. Have to be connected through your own home Wi-Fi yeah. system. You can't just go to, like, Panera's. You can't go
that
to the mall
awesome.
And use their Wi-Fi.
If that were the case, I would never get anything done. I mean, I'm bad enough sometimes. Like, I get in trouble sometimes, like, if we're shopping and I'm on my phone. And, like, why aren't you paying attention? We're shopping.
I'd be like, you know what, hon? Try on all the clothes you want. Because this store has
yeah,
Wi-Fi.
That's it. And, I mean, it would be awful. I would never get anything done, ever. Except for a lot of video game unlocking.
You'd be kick-ass in Halo.
Goodness, I would be, like, level 7 million in Skyrim.
Oh, I'm telling you. It'd be pretty awesome. And the thing is, like, the whole Windows 10 conference, I don't know how much of it you saw, but I immediately posted about the HoloLens. Because I think the HoloLens is going to be a huge innovation in gaming. Obviously, it's going to depend on what other people decide to do as well. But just the presentation of that HoloLens is amazing. And one of the things that really irked me about the HoloLens is I do listen to several other podcasts just to see what other people's takes are on things. And it seemed like everybody was bitching about the fact that they call it the HoloLens. And that it's not really a hologram. Well, who gives a fuck? Because they said it's augmented reality. And that's what it is. They didn't say necessarily. I understand that it's called the HoloLens. And they refer to holographic images.
It's a name.
Let's,
it's just a name.
Yeah, let's not get bogged down in all the I feel I need to mm-hmm. be right.
Do you think when Nintendo 3D came out that people, like, I mean, like, the old, old one, like, back for, like, NES, do you remember there was, like, that big, like, mask thing, and you could kind of play games that were sort of in 3D? Do you think people got that upset when they called that 3D? Because it wasn't really 3D. It was kind of, like, normal D, but, like, with two layers. It was, like,
I think I got GamePro magazine mm-hmm. back then. I don't even know if they still make GamePro magazine. But GamePro magazine made a brief mention of the fact that it wasn't 3D. Yeah. But at the same time, we didn't have social media and podcasting and all that to where people could just instantly go out and say, oh, but it's not, because we feel this need to just be right and to call other people mm-hmm. wrong.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're going to say it's not awesome. Oh, no, you're right. It's bad. No.
Yeah, and I just think that the HoloLens, now forget holograms and holographic imagery and things like that. Look at it as what it is. And what it is has a lot of potential to be pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, totally.
I actually, on the very first episode of Toons Game Time, I had Mart on. And Mart and I were talking about this and saying that maybe this is something that Nintendo needs to look at. And I used Google Glass, which is essentially their version of, mm-hmm. of this. And I said, you could do it like it's a HUD, a heads-up display, kind of an overlay of the video game that's on the TV. You have, like, a sub-menu kind of thing where you're able to utilize that. And little did I know that, what, 3 weeks later, that we would end up seeing that very thing pop out from Microsoft. And I just saw that, and I watched the video. I must have watched the video 6 or 7 times. And I'm just so pumped for it, just seeing the possibilities. And I know this is a version 1 of a new technology. So to expect anything too much would be stupid and foolish. But just looking at the possibilities, the things that they could possibly come up with.
It's a big step towards
awesomeness. It's a huge step. But I'm looking forward to it. I want one. And my wife has already told me absolutely not. So I guess I'm just going to have to get a new wife.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the only option here. Or if you end up having to wait, save up for it, and by the time you got the money for it, they'll have it, all the tweaks and everything made out so that the HoloLens 3 will be perfect. So
yeah, I really do. I want one bad. But, you know, that's one of those things, new shiny thing.
I still want Nintendo 3D, so I haven't got that yet. So it's going to, I got a bit of a wait here, I think.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's fine, but what we're going to do now, because we did have 4 news stories, I'm going to move on and hit up the topic of the day, which is actually going to be kind of a small one, but also kind of important. So what we're going to do? I'm going to play the soundbite. I had to find a way to play that one. This week's topic of the week, or of the day, depending on which you want to break it down as, joystick.com. If you're not familiar with them, they pretty much have all kinds of different video games news, and they review games and all that other fun stuff. Well, what they've decided to do here recently is they've decided to stop rating games using numbers. What it comes down to, I'm just going to read their article so they can explain it. And I listened to their podcast where they explained it too, so we'll kind of get into that. But the article says, ever since we started publishing reviews here at Joystick, we've striven to deliver the most timely and definitive critiques we can. The word definitive is important in this conversation because things don't get much more definitive than a review score. The very purpose of a score is to define something entirely nebulous and subjective, fun, as narrowly as possible. The problem is that narrowing down something as broad and fluid as a video game isn't truly useful, especially in today's industry. It goes on to talk about pre-release reviews, post-release, like patching, things like that. And that's one of the things that I think was the most key part. Basically, you get a version of the game. The reviewers get copies of the game before it even comes out. And they play those games, and they come up with the review scores, and the people help, the developers use that to help market the game. What they review is different than what we get. It just is. Not to mention the fact that when was the last time you bought a game and plugged it in and you didn't have an update immediately?
Right away.
Yeah.
Game's
so
already different.
Basically, yeah, and that's the thing. So basically, the way they explained it on the podcast, the Joystick podcast, was they kind of went into it. It's almost not fair because you have sites like Metacritic. Metacritic was the main one that they called out for this, and they weren't being mean or facetious or anything like that. But Metacritic basically compiles all the review scores and kind of just kind of does like a Rotten Tomatoes kind of thing with movies, where they compile them and sort of come up with a way to average it. Well, the problem is that they only do like initial reviews. Well, the initial reviews are based on the product that is before any kind of patches, which often come down on day one. So it's like, how fair is the system if they're going to give up a number to a game that's going to immediately be updated? They're going to have add-on feature, downloadable content, all these fun things that add to the experience of the game. How can you quantify that? And I really respect them for doing this because it is pretty far outside the box. They're getting a lot of backlash. What are your thoughts on this? Is this a good idea for them to do, to where they just print out what they think of the game and just basically shun the whole number system?
Yeah, I like number systems. It's easier. I don't have to read much, and I get the basic idea. I mean, it's not going to help them get on, like, in any advertisements, really, because you always see, like, they rated this 4.5 out of 5 stars, and this was rated, like, 10 video game remotes out of 10 video game remotes. I don't know if that's a real one. I just made that one up. I don't see it. I don't like it. Maybe for people that want in-depth reviews, but again, with in-depth reviews, as you said, the game's not necessarily going to be the exact same by the time that you get your hands on it. So I only really see the purpose of review, because most times, I mean, I don't really take reviews as seriously. I don't always like the same games that other people like. So reviews, to me personally, I find very little use in. So I only see, and the same with movies and stuff like that. Reviews, more so, if anything, are just a way of trying to get yourself attached to the movie where, you know, or the video game where it comes out and your quote is on the cover, you know, or like, best game of the year, 5 out of 5 stars. And I don't really see a purpose for it beyond that.
And I always reject the things like, Call of Duty is the game of the month.
Not.
It's like, what?
Liar.
Call of Duty, it's the same as last year. How can it be the
game
of the month?
It's been the game of the month forever.
So. Yeah, and I think it does. I think you hit the nail on the head. It really, it's completely one of those things where it's nice to have as a guide. Because obviously, if you're going to be comparing, if I have a gun pointed at my head, I'm obviously going to take the 8.5 score over a 4. Because clearly something's wrong with the 4 rated game. That even if I don't necessarily like the genre of game, an 8.5 is going to give me probably a better experience. Now, the thing is, I'm kind of torn on it, because I do. I like the number system as well, because like you said, it's easy. I mean, it's really simple to sit there and say, well, shit, 4.5 out of 5 stars? All right. I know that it's a good game, a really good game. And at the same time, like, sometimes those scores are completely simplified, and a lot of times we've been dealing with the whole disclosure and things like that in the video game review industry, where they have to pander to the advertisers for their magazines or whatever. And so there's always that wondering, like, well, did they give them a 70 when they were really deserving of a 55? So that's kind of rough. But at the same time, I don't think eliminating the numbers are going to do anything to curb that, because even if you read their articles, they're still going to paint a nice flowery picture of it.
Yeah.
But it is. It's. I think it's a very brave thing they're doing, and I think it's also possibly a stupid thing that they're doing, because most of the time we just, that's the first thing you look at. You just look to see that number. What's that number? And is that number something that interests me in reading the rest of the article?
I agree 100%. That's the first thing I'll look at. If I'm going to read, like, if a game's coming out, like, for example, for the last one for me was that, for Wii U was, what is it called? Toad's Adventure, or Adventure Isle, something like that. It was this new Toad game, and it's just like these mini puzzle games, more or less, where you gotta guide Toad from Mario around on this little block, and you gotta collect these stars. It was actually a mini game on Mario 3D. Just basically to collect extra stars when trying to get through the levels. And so I went and I checked all the reviews, and a lot of them were just very high star ratings. Sometimes when I say reviews, my voice goes high-pitched. Anyways, the game is fun. It's fun. I had a point with this, and I totally lost it because of the high-pitched voice thing.
And that's it. You want to hear from people who have actually played the games and
have no connection to whether it be advertising or the game in any way, right? I don't want to hear a review from McDonald's about how delicious Big Macs are, because McDonald's is going to tell me that Big Macs are delicious. And though I don't argue that, I can't, you know, necessarily say that they're going to give me a non-biased rating. And when companies are trying to get, like, associated with video games and magazines and trying to get their review as, you know, having their name attached to the game itself, they're not going to be giving non-biased reviews of the game. So you can't always take that serious, I guess.
Exactly. And it's one of the things that, like, when you read a review, it's easy to kind of mask your feelings, like if you're rating something. Whereas, like, things like X-Play, I don't know if you get that up in Canada, but G4 TV had a show called X-Play where they would do video game reviews, and they would do it in video format. It's on TV, on cable. And it was easy to get into it because they were actually playing the game when they were talking about it. And if they were genuinely enthused about a game and how it played and everything, you could tell. And when they weren't that interested, you could tell that too. And it's harder in print form, in online form. IGN, if you go to IGN.com for your reviews, you're insane. Because they kind of all feel the same. I never feel emotionally moved by any of them. They have a lot of good information on IGN. But their reviews suck.
Well, and that just goes to the point earlier. IGN is one of the ones that you always see associated with games where IGN gave it this rating. IGN said it was the game of the year for the, you know, the third game this year that they've said is the game of the year. Can you really take that seriously when they're giving good ratings to pretty much every game because they know that when the little trailer poster comes out, they're going to be featured on that, right? So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Get out of here, IGN, is what I'm saying. Stop giving us your fake reviews just to get on video game advertisements and trailers and commercials. And I got to start making a site where I rate games 10 out of 10. And then I could get all the free advertisement from everybody.
Yeah, and if you actually want to read some decent reviews, I encourage you to go to Jason Rivera's listentotheshow.com. He does some video game reviews every now and again over there, but he does only the games that he's played, and he's actually just a dude like you
and
I.
That's what you want to hear it from. So, you want to hear it from, like, a guy that's had to go and buy the video game, and, you know, I would trust that review than I would, like, some guy who works for a big company that's getting paid to do it.
Yeah, I think he actually did write reviews for one of the companies at one point, but now he's no longer with them, and so he just does it on his own whenever he feels like doing it, which is the way it should be.
Exactly.
If you feel like doing
it,
do it. So, either way, that's kind of an interesting topic, and that's going to have to do with actually our question of the week. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to play the commercial of the week, and then come back with the question of the week. Maybe, if I can find it. This is a perfect example of why I should have slept. Anyway, think back to 1991. Here's your commercial of the week.
We last left Bart Simpson battling deadly space mutants in acclaimed best-selling video game Bart vs. the Space Mutants. And now it's Bart vs. the World. Bart Mania continues to spread.
Mow the lawn. I got better things to do.
And now, portable Bart Mania in Escape from Camp Deadly or Game Boy. Bart Mania now comes three ways for your NES and Game Boy from Acclaim.
Okay, so first off, The Simpsons. This was all the way back in 1991, and that wasn't actually... The Simpsons were out before then. These weren't the first Simpsons games. Which is disturbing, because that alone was freaking 24 years ago.
You know what was the best Simpsons game? Bart's Nightmare.
Bart's Nightmare?
That game was awesome. Awesome.
See, I don't remember which ones I played, because there were so many of them.
That was the one where you were, like, walking through the streets as Bart. And there was, like, little pieces of paper, and you would jump on the paper, and it would be, like, a little mini game.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And, like, if you could play as the different characters, and, like, Marge would push around, like, the
vacuum
cleaner
or something.
No,
that was the arcade game. There was an arc.
That was the arcade
game, too.
Yeah. I remember putting so many quarters in that thing.
So many at the bowling alley in Oshawa, Ontario. My goodness, the amount of money I dropped on that game. Whew.
I absolutely love The Simpsons, and I did. I've played so many of them, and I get them all mixed up. But they were so fun, and it's disturbing to me how long The Simpsons have been around.
Forever.
And they just keep going.
And it's still funny, you know? I mean, I do see people that, like, bash on how the show's not the same. I mean, the show's been on forever. Would you really want it to be the exact same? I would.
Yeah,
it
seriously.
It would drive me nuts. Everyone would be ragging on it for not growing and changing.
And it wasn't supposed to be the same. It reflects on... It's kind of like South Park.
Exactly.
It reflects a society that we live in, and society is changing. And if you want to say that The Simpsons sucks now, that's because it's reflecting on you.
It's not The Simpsons that suck. It's you that sucks.
Yeah. Exactly. So. Exactly.
And, but, I mean, and it just goes to show, though. I mean, The Simpsons, it's how many seasons now? South Park is what? They're creeping. They got to be creeping on 20 seasons now. So this works.
And
that show is getting, in my opinion, funnier. Like, I mean, the last 10 seasons of that show are hilarious. It's just gotten so much better. And it's because people keep getting so much worse.
Yeah. Oh, you're
and it makes
kidding.
Me.
People are.
Awful. <It's... laughs> Awful.
You're like, why do I hate
Hopefully
people?
Hopefully everyone's, like, tuned out at this point. We're like, everyone, you listening, terrible. Ugh. But you make The Simpsons and South Park so much better. But and that's,
yeah, they
you know,
are.
It works for them. And these shows have gone on for 20-plus seasons. So, I mean, it works.
Because
they're hilarious.
Hilarious. Yes, absolutely. And that's going to actually bring us, we'll get into the question of the week here so we can wrap this baby up. Last week's question of the week was as follows. Every gamer has that moment that made them realize that video games were for them. What was your moment? First off, David on Twitter actually responded with, quote, Super Mario Brothers, end quote, via Twitter. He's at DPS2002. Super Mario Brothers is, I think, everybody's first exposure. The majority of people's first real exposure to big-time gaming consoles. I remember the first time I played Super Mario Brothers, it was actually at a local skating rink in the arcade version. Whenever I saw it come out on the NES, I was like, I play that game. And that was, like, the coolest thing, that they could port that onto a home console. So I don't think anybody's not familiar with Super Mario Brothers, even younger people.
It's not possible.
Because, I mean, they've had it the 25th anniversary edition on the Wii.
Well, I mean, Nintendo mostly is still living off of Mario, so it's Mario's not, you know, there's no way that Nintendo's going to let anybody forget about Mario, because the second people forget about Mario is the second they stop being Nintendo.
Yeah.
That's it. I wouldn't have a Wii U if they weren't still making Nintendo games. Or, like, Mario games.
Yeah.
Mario games, not Nintendo games.
Yeah, I mean, Mario's iconic. I mean, you can't think video games without the first face popping up in your mind being that lovable Italian, Asian plumber
thing.
Well,
the first songs I learned on the ukulele was the Super Mario theme, so that just goes to show the impact that Mario has had on not only my joy of video games, but my...
A little Mario trivia for you. And this totally depressed me when I found out. Did you realize that Mario going down the pipe is the same as Mario getting hit?
You told me that, and I had not. Down? I remember, I think right after you'd found it out, you messaged me, I think, on Facebook, and were like, did you know? And I didn't, and I was shocked by it. Who knew that they were
I know.
Laziness?
I was like, whenever I saw that, I was like, that sucks.
Which is anyway. Show if I need to learn like a sound effect on an instrument to get that, I only have to learn one for both. Problem solved.
Yeah, what I think it is it's the whole, you draw a visual and you combine that visual with the sound that happens and they become one thing. So basically you see him going down the pipe. Yes, you hear that same exact sound, but because you see something different, it's just different. And I think that's kind of what it is with it. And I could be dead wrong on that, but that was my theory.
You're right.
Because I was so disturbed by the fact that I didn't realize that before.
Considering the amount of time, I guarantee that you, much like myself, spent playing that game. You know, I mean, I have them all. Like I've got them all on my Wii. I've got Mario 1. I've got Mario 2. I've got, you know, Mario 3. They're all there. I still play them occasionally. It's not unrealistic for me to bust out, like, the old Mario and, like, enjoy it as much as pretty much any other game that I would play now, so.
And you just randomly hum the music.
While dancing.
Then, and Mart actually emailed me to respond to this question, which you can do as well, tuneshow@gmail.com. He said, quote, I know I'm old, but I really don't. Want to say Pong got me into gaming, and I'm positive it doesn't count, as I only got to dabble occasionally, as it was a neighbor's machine. Before I owned my very own Atari 2600, I had a Space Invaders game called Astro Wars. It was like having your own mini arcade machine. In 1981, that shit was awesome.
Awesome.
Now, I looked up Astro Wars because I'm like, I had never heard of that. And basically, if you took like a, you know how Mac had the crazy colored monitors a couple years ago? If you kind of shrunk that down to maybe a little smaller than a bowling ball, that's essentially what this Astro Wars machine was. And it was. In Space Invaders, essentially, is what it was. They called it a portable machine. But the thing was, it was like, it took like 4 D-cell batteries. So it's like, how portable can it be?
I think back then, they could call anything portable that you could just physically pick up and move, right? I mean, if you could pick it up and move it without like injuring yourself,
like,
it's
that's
portable. Like,
it's the size of a suitcase and weighs 82 pounds, but because it has wheels on it, then it's portable.
My goodness. Yeah. That's why we were so blown
like
away by Game Boy when it came out.
Apparently you could max out a score of 9,999, but they made it so immensely hard it like got just exponentially harder as you played. So I guess not many people could actually max it out.
It's like trying to...
Very interesting.
For sure.
But you actually had tweeted... I'll just let you tell the story and then I'll tell you mine. What moment did you realize that you were?
I went from saying I've only told Chris this the other day to I've only told you this to. Anyways, I knew that I was addicted to video games. I'm going to use the word addicted. I think I was probably 6, maybe 7. I'm considering saying much younger, so it's less embarrassing. I believe the tweet was when I stopped getting up to go to the bathroom. The joke was mostly around Victoria Day. I think, like I said, I was 6 or 7. Big firework day. We, you know, go watch fireworks, and I was playing video games. I'm trying to remember exactly what game it was. I don't know if it was Excitebike or there was a few games I was really into at the time. So I can barely remember what I had for dinner last night. So. But I do remember I had a little rocking chair at my grandma's place, and we were just waiting for it to get dark so we could drive to the park to watch the fireworks. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I had to go to the bathroom. But, I mean, I was playing a game. I do I dare pause and get up to... I obviously ended up pissing my pants. And I missed the fireworks because my dad had to take me home to get me pants with less urine in them. And it was then that I knew that I might have an unhealthy addiction to... Now, I would like to clear the air and say that I've since to bring a cup with me so that if I have to piss, I can just piss in the cup without having to get up and spoil my gameplay.
It'd be both unhealthy medically and socially.
I realize how uncomfortable it is to sit in piss-soaked pants, so it's not so much laziness as much as my displeasure for just basically having that awful sensation of urinating your pants. Anyways, thanks, that's out there.
To be fair, though, I don't think that's too uncommon. Mm-hmm. Because I know my son had a lot of very, very close calls because he would wait until the absolute last minute and then go running across the living room through the kitchen to the to the downstairs bathroom, like just dead sprint.
There's something in us where, like, though the game can wait, it can't wait. I must just urinate right now and not lose a beat.
It's nuts. I tend to remember my little cousins actually having the same issue as well. So I really don't think that that problem is uncommon.
When you're younger.
We'll say that.
like you said when I initially told you, it's not like I did it in my 20s. So anytime that happened in my 20s, I was inebriated in some way. So it wasn't like I meant to do it. I'm done talking. Take it away.
Yeah, I mean, at that point... It's hard to step away from him, and we deal with that on a daily basis with my son, because he'll sit there and play Minecraft until his eyeballs bleed, and you have to tear him away from it. And so it's really not. It's pretty common, I would imagine. Mine's not embarrassing like that. My moment, actually, I love Super Mario Brothers. I really did. But for the Nintendo, as much as I love Super Mario Brothers, Tetris... I would play for hours, and my eyes would literally be watering while I was playing Tetris, and I was so locked into that game, trying to beat that score, and just seeing, like, basically Tetris on the Game Boy is what forced me to need a Game Boy, because not only could I play it on the NES, I could also take it with me, and I was like, I need Tetris. I need to play Tetris. I still have Tetris on various platforms here. I have it on my phone. I have it on actually the Xbox upstairs, which I still play it. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm talking the original Xbox. I still play it on that. I just love Tetris. I've always loved Tetris. It was one of those ones where my hands would be so sore from holding the Nintendo controller and just playing Tetris over and over and over again, trying to beat that score, trying to just race that music. I don't know what it was about that music, but it had a way of hooking you into it. And I had to play it. I played it for months without playing anything else, despite the fact that I had other games to play. Tetris was what really locked me in. And at that point, I was like, you know what? This is freaking awesome.
Tetris was great. That was one of the first games I remember playing. Like, I mean, outside, like, Atari games, that was one of the first Nintendo games that I remember really getting into a lot.
It's just so simple. Like, the concept is so simple.
And, like, the way they have it, like you said, like, even with the music and stuff, and the way that as you get closer to losing, like, the intensity at the time of, like, the change in the theme where you know that you're like, I gotta fix this or I'm gonna lose, and then...
And the pure and simple joy of getting a Tetris, a four-row Tetris, and just making that thing explode and
so
level
up. The glowing, the sound, everything. Just, it was a great game. I have it on my phone. I love Tetris still.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. So, kudos to Tetris for starting Brian's video game addiction.
The Russians are good for something.
Jeez. It's like attributing a first beer.
Yeah, I think they call them tetragons or something like that. The little four four block things. Either way, the question of the week for next week, kind of important for y'all to know. You can answer in any of the ways we actually already said. But next week's question of the week is as follows. Earlier in the show, we talked about Joystick's decision to stop rating games numerically. My question for you is, how often do you use these ratings to determine whether or not to buy a game? So I want to know that from you. How often do you use ratings to influence your decision on whether or not to buy a game? And basically, whether you use other means, whether it's conversation or whatever. Hit me up. All the different Toon Show's addresses, Toon Show at Skype. You can actually leave a voicemail. I do have that set up. So you can use Skype and voicemail it or send me a message via Toon Show. Toon Show on Twitter. You can do toonshow@gmail.com or there's actually a contact form at toonshow.com. I actually put that up this week as well. So hit me up with that. Let me know how often you use ratings to determine whether or not to buy a game. Not specifically Joystick, any site or magazine or anything like that. So let's look at the games that are coming up this week. January 28th, which is today, Raven's Cry for the PS3 and 4, the PC and Mac. January 30th, you've got Life is Strange Episode 1. That's actually Friday. That is for the PS3 and 4, the Xbox One and 360, and PC. And then February 10th, you got a little bit of a gap. I'm sure that there's some things coming down. I'm just not 100% sure on what those are. But February 10th, the big one, is Evolve for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. That's going to be kind of a large game. It should sell a lot, I would imagine. But you never know until it happens.
I'll have to wait to see the
review. So that's going to... Yeah. it's. I'm sure that somebody's going to die playing it. Somebody died, I think, in the past week in China, I want to say. Not a big surprise. I think they went, like, 3 straight days playing a video game.
That person knew they were addicted to video games when...
Yeah, it happens at least like 4 times a year, and typically in Korea or China.
Peeing my pants isn't such a big deal anymore. At least I live to talk about it on a podcast many years later.
I don't understand. They had to pee themselves.
Well,
a
they definitely
times.
Did at the end.
You're talking peas. But either way. We're going to call that a show. In the meantime, do you have anything that you would like to plug? I know you're doing
furry friends. Yes.
Thing,
charity? Right now, Furry Friends, which is a local cat shelter here in Barrie, Ontario, that just basically stray cats, they take them in, they help, you know, get them healthy, and then they help find them homes. Non-profit organization. Right now, my very, very close blog is trying to help them raise money for a cat. The cat actually has had the dental surgery, which he needed to have done before they could, you know, start working to look to find him a home here in the area. But the shelter itself is, they had to cough up the money to obviously get this done. So we're still trying to help raise them a little bit of money to cover some of the costs, because it was like just about $1,000, I think, to get this dental work done on the cat. So if you go to www.averyverycoolsblog.com, just in the side panel, if you're interested in looking into ways to donate, there's a section just on the side that says a smile for Andrew. There's a massive picture of a cat. I realize there's lots of cats on this website. A lot for a hockey blog.
The one not wearing a hockey jersey.
However, if you look there, there's ways that you can see how you can donate. Even if you could just help by sharing it so other people can see it. They offer many perks here in Canada and in America that, like, for example, if you donate, like, $15, you can get like a $10 gift certificate for like Harvey's, and that's just an example of some of the ones that, here in Canada, anyways. So if you need that, it's funny because it's actually called Greedy Giver, is the site that has it. So that was the one thing. If you could donate, every little bit helps. If you could share it, that also is very helpful, just in retweets or Facebook shares. So also. One other thing I wanted to say is Brian here currently has 999 followers on the Twitter machine. So if you don't already,
I should have pulled Triple H.
If you don't already, you still have time. If you don't already, give him a follow at Toons Brian. And the last thing I wanted to touch on. I listened to you and Paul on Radio PI this week, the other day, following the All-Star game, where Paul, at Evil Shero on Twitter, if you know him, said something about our PI Shop Wars. Now, I could plug this to try to win, but I'm already winning because my Photoshops are superior in every way. Though Paul stated that he would quit Penn's initiative if he lost for a fourth consecutive week, that's 4-0, which, as I look at the ratings, I am up by 59%. You don't have to quit PI, Paul, but you know, just you might want to put a little bit more effort into the next Shop Wars. And that's pretty much it. I just wanted to get the furry friends thing mentioned, try to give you a cheap pop plug to get you that one extra follower, and tell Paul that I'm the best at Photoshops, even though he taught me.
I was thinking about, like, just tweeting out some sort of, like, some sort of anything word that would, like, attract a bot, a Twitter
team
bot as a follower.
Team follow back.
Yeah.
I wrote team follow back because I was, like, talking about people who, you know, the people that follow you, they wait for a follow, and then after, like, 2 or 3 days, if you don't follow, they unfollow you. Yeah. I commented on that, and I was like, oh, I'm not team follow back. You know, if I want to follow someone, I'm going to follow them. I don't care what my Twitter numbers are. I'm not trying to pad my stats.
Neither do I. I think it's kind of fun. I want to stay at 999,
no, everyone actually. Follow Brian. Get him to at least 1,000, and that's it.
Quadruple digits, baby.
You've made it. You've made it, Brian.
Either way. Yeah, I get to claim celebrity status. Maybe I can get verified
now. Well, actually, now you're going to be a third-line contributor at Penn's Initiative. So 1,000 is when you get bumped up to that third line. So congratulations, bud.
10%.
Do I have another account? I got like 20 Twitter accounts. One of them must not be full. No, they all follow you. Never mind.
Yeah, something. I don't know. Either way, that's going to call it. We're going to call that a week for Toons Game Time here. I will apologize once more for my dead exhaustion. And however, I'm not editing this baby because what the hell? Everybody has their tired days. And this isn't the best example of what we got, but it was a blast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me again. I had a great time.
Really appreciate it. You are welcome back anytime. Next week, I actually have another guest lined up. At Toons, we kind of enjoy the idea of making new friends, and this is a person that I've never actually talked to, even now. I've not talked to this person. However, he has agreed to come on. His name is Tucker, and he will be joining me next week here on Toons Game Time. We're going to talk about all the news, all the upcoming games, which he will be an expert on, as well as the question of the week, and whatever the topic of the week is that I come up with for that. So be sure to tune in next time. Make sure you're following every show on the Trending Topics Network, which you can find at TrendingTopicsNetwork.com, and keep it peeled to Toonshow.com for all the latest on Toons Game Time and Toons with Jack and Brian. Until next week, my name is Brian. He's Ryan. I want to be Brian O'Ryan O'Brien. Hit the reset button.